Welcome back. We are talking about Sefer Mishlei after however many weeks. And we did the introduction. We talked about what he was trying, what Tom was trying to do here. And we now start with the actual book of Mishlei, which starts with the famous pasuk of Shema b'ni musar avicha v'al titosh torat imecha. Listen, my son, to the instruction of your father, and do not forget the Torah of your mother. Because they will be a crown of grace on your head, and a necklace around your neck. And this whole entire section, this first basically book of Mishlei, which goes through Perek Tet, is all addressed to this hypothetical child, Shema b'ni musar avicha. And this expression of b'ni, b'nim, as a direct apostrophe, a direct address, is 19 times in this section here. Only 6 times the rest of the Sefer, which even mentioned. The rest of it really isn't. It doesn't have this overall theme. This is what we're telling our. This is what we're telling our children. So Shema b'ni musar avicha v'al titosh torat imecha. And the important mashal is that there are these two halves here: the musar avicha and the torat imecha. And this is Rav Soloveitchik famously quoted. Talked about this a number of times. this is from the. There were two Masoras that Moshe transferred to Yeshua. One is the tradition of Torah learning of Lamdas. The second Masora, called the Hod, the glory, the echo, is experiential. One can know the entire Masechet Shabbos and still not know what Shabbos is. To truly know what Shabbos is, one has to spend time in a Yiddish home. Even those neighborhoods made up prominently of religious Jews, today one can no longer talk of the sanctity of Shabbos. Two, there are Jews in America who observe Shabbos. There are no Erev Shabbos Jews who go out to greet Shabbos with beating hearts and pulsating souls. He would put it. And this idea of that is that's Torah Dimecha, what you see and experience. And then, so eventually, again, this was his hesped for his Mechutanista, the Rebbe of Talmud. What is Torah Dimecha? What kind of Torah does a mother pass on? I am not able to define precisely the Masoretic role of the Jewish mother. I used to watch my mother arranging the house in honor of a holiday. I used to see her recite prayers. I used to watch her recite the Siddur every Friday night, and I still remember the nostalgic tune. I learned from her very much. Most of all, I learned that Judaism expressed itself not only in formal compliance with the law, but also in a living experience. Telling me there's a flavor, a scent, and a warmth through mitzvot. I learned from her the most important thing in life, to feel the presence of the Almighty, and the gentle pressure of his hand resting upon my frail shoulders. Without her teachings, which quite often were transmitted to me in silence, would have grown up a soulless being, dry and insensitive. And the place where we see that idea, this Torah Dimecha, and it can be both fathers and mothers here, but the idea that Musar Avicha is the strict, okay, here's the text, you better learn that, opposed to Torah Dimecha, which is the observation. And the continuity of experience. We have that in all the Agadot of Serach. I know Ruthie loves learning about Serach. Right. And that's the one, Serach is the daughter of Asher, the granddaughter of Yaakov, who never dies, lives out through all Jewish history, through all these Midrash and Agadot. Right? That when Serach is mentioned in Bamidbar, as they're about to enter Eretz Yisrael, B'Shem Bat Serach Asher, B'Shem Bat Asher Serach, that's in Parsha Pinchas. She was still alive even at that point. Even though
She
she
was
went
alive,
down.
but she never really dies.
Right. And we've talked about the idea that even taking that seriously, but not literally, that the idea of Sarah lives through history. She's the one who pops up in all these Agadot and says, this is what our history is. Now she's the one who says, this is where Yosef is buried. This is what Yitzhak is trying. This is what the Yam Suf looked like when it was split. And again, this is Rav Soloveitchik bringing up this model. I feel Moshe. So even in the generation of Moshe, they're about to enter Israel. The door Plaim Sheyatzim Mitzrayim, the generation, all the wonders that left Egypt. Shera Marot Elokim B'Sinai, the generation of those who saw the wonders of God at Har Sinai. Torah, got the Torah. Hayu, Kaduma. They needed an earlier image of Serach Bat Asher. She was there as well. Shebiyelduta yashva b'chekosha saba zaken. When her youth sat in their old saba's lap, hitshasha b'sarot roshov zakenon, played with his hair and his beard. Without her, the continuity of the generations would have been interrupted. There's no way that Israel could have said, "This is my God. I glorify him." If that wasn't connected to the song about the past, Elokei, those two things have to go together. Rak im zekena, just this old mother, shechocheket gav v'choreshet panim, with wrinkled forehead and furrowed brow, very poetic. Shehitchat al lifnei zaken, and she is one who sat before the old man, v'karo lo saba, and called him saba. Right, she's the granddaughter of Yaakov. You know, yedaz sod chibur. She's the one who can tell us about the secret of the continuity of generations. And how now is connected to them. And that's what Torah Dimecha is in this mashal here. And of course, this is a mashal, it's a metaphor, right? Shema b'ni Musar Avicha is the ben here is all of us. Now, listening that Sefer Mishlei and the Av V'em represent how Kodesh Baruch Hu represent Hashem, and I am as the people as a whole, respectively. That's the way Rashi reads this mashal. Shema b'ni Musar Avicha, Machan Tana Kodesh Baruch Hu Moshe B'Ketav Al Peh. That's Musar Avicha is the words of the Torah. Ketav is Al Peh. That Imecha, he says, read that as Umatecha, your people, Knesset Yisrael, the people of Israel as a whole. That's what the Musar comes from. Okay, Yechezkel used that expression Ma Imcha Leviyah when he used the metaphor of your mother. In this case, was a lioness, but that was the history of the Jewish people. So Chaim Soloveitchik, have you ever read Rupture and Reconstruction?
What
Rupture and Reconstruction by Chaim Soloveitchik in the 1980s wrote this article about how we change how we deal with Musar, the tradition, because with the Holocaust, the things Jews got disrupted. You no longer could see what the way your grandparents kept the Torah. So you had to basically pull that back out of books. And see, this is called that Torah Temeches, the mimetic tradition. Mimetic meaning imitative. You learn by watching, by simply being there. The way of life is not learned, rather absorbed. Transmission is mimetic, imbibed from parents and friends, and patterned on conduct regularly observed in the home and street, synagogue and school. Did these mimetic norms, the culturally prescriptive, conform with the legal ones? The answer is at times yes and at times no. And the significance of the no may be best brought home by example which we are all familiar, the kosher kitchen, with this rigid separation of milk and meat, separate sinks, separate dishes, dish racks, towels, tablecloths, even separate cupboards. Actually, little of this has a basis in halacha. Now, I'm not passing for you, okay? But strictly sink speaking, there's no need for separate sinks or separate dish towels or cupboards. In fact, if the food is served cold, there's no need for separate dishware altogether. Some of the fact that traditional Jewish kitchen, transmitted from mother to daughter over generations, has been immeasurably and unrecognizably amplified beyond all halachic requirements. Its classic contours is a product not of legal exegesis, but of the housewife's religious intuition imparted in kitchen apprenticeship. We call kashrus basically as Torah Zimecha, which is convenient because almost always, if you have a question that comes up, you know, I mixed a plate soup with a milk and spoon. The answer is almost always, it's okay. Because we go so far beyond the actual law, because this is just what we do. So that gets lost, though. Is loss, this rupture, the loss of the mimetic tradition in the traditional religious sensibilities that underlies much of the transformation of contemporary orthodoxy. Zealous to continue traditional Judaism unimpaired, religious Jews seek to ground their new emergent spirituality less on a now unattainable intimacy with him than an intimacy with his will, avidly eliciting its intricate demands and saturating their daily lives with its exactions. We get much more from as we all look at the books. Having, this is his classic quote, having lost the touch of his presence, they seek now solace in the pressure of his yoke. So that's No, so Rav Soloveitchik mentioned talking about the feel the presence of the Almighty, the gentle pressure of his hands. That's what he felt looking at his own mother here. We don't have that as much. So now we're left with just the dry words of the book over here. So that Sefer Mishlei is meant to do both. We've got the Musar Avicha and the Torah Timecha. And not just lectures of dry law, but it's not mimetic since we're not actually watching it. We're still reading the words in here. We're not participating. So these Mishalim aren't really observations. They're meant to be things that we just think about and hopefully imagine what's going on. And we're reading out them, reading about them. They still serve to sort of set the tone of what we're supposed to be and how we're supposed to feel. The first lesson, after talking about that, is about what mimetic intuition means, that we learn what to think by watching other people. And it starts with Bini im batucha chataim al tove. My son, if sinners try to entice you, don't go with them. Im amru lecha itanu nerval adam, if they tell you, come with us, we'll lie in wait, we'll ambush to draw blood. It's benal nakichinam, we'll lie in hiding for the innocent for nothing. Yibleim kishol chayim, we'll swallow them up alive. These are all these chataim are trying to talk to you, my son. Utimim kior debar will swallow up the innocent, like those who go down to the pit. Kolhon yakar nimsa, we'll find all sorts of valuables. We'll rob them. Malei betenu shalal, we'll fill our houses with plunder. So come join us. Throw your lot in with us. Kizecha we'll share the loot. We'll share one wallet. We're all this together. And so that's the warning. That is the beginning of the Musar Avicha, Torah Timecha. Be careful when people try to get you to join them. They're going to do bad things. And then I mentioned Jonathan Haidt's article that I actually just found from back in 2000. You know Jonathan Haidt, sociologist? He's popular now because he talks about how our youth are all becoming more depressed and more anxious. The more they are exposed to social media and the less they have actual independence. But even before that, he looked at where morality comes from. And he pointed out that moral decisions are made not by logical reasoning, but by intuition. And that intuition is socially determined. This is his article, again, from 2000, almost a quarter century ago. This article reviews evidence against rationalist models and proposes an alternative, the social intuitionist model, as for morality. Intuitionism in philosophy refers to the view that there are moral truths. And when people grasp these truths, they do not do so by a process of ratiocination, which means thinking, and reflection, rather a process more akin to perception, which one just sees without argument that they are and must be true. We make moral judgments instantaneously. We don't think about them. The social part of the social intuitionist model proposed that moral judgment should be studied as an interpersonal process. Moral reasoning is usually an ex post facto process, meaning we've already decided what's right and wrong. Then we try to justify it, and you put it to words.
So, Dana, do you think they're talking about Derech Eretz kind of thing?
Yeah, the way we deal with other people, when we think that something's right or wrong, we don't stop. It doesn't come from what I would call ethics, meaning we stop and rationalize it and think about it. All these articles, all these thought experiments about the trolley problem and who'd you save and all that. That's not how people actually work. You start out with a gut feeling and then figure out what rules are necessary to make that work. You talk about it in order to influence the intuitions and judgments of other people. Social intuition. This model, one feels a quick flash of revulsion, the thought of incest. One knows intuitively that something is wrong. Then, when faced with a social demand for a verbal justification, one becomes a lawyer trying to build a case rather than a judge searching for truth. Because people are highly attuned to the emergence of group norms, the model proposes the mere fact that friends, allies, and acquaintances have made a moral judgment exerts a direct influence on others, even if no reasoned persuasion is used. So really, what we just that into what their intuition comes from is what we see other people doing. That determines normal. So strictly, rationalist ethics doesn't work, and the intuitionist one is real, but doesn't sound very moral there. That's really what it is. That's mimetic morality. That's how our brains work, okay? Because we're social apes. As long as we're social apes in small clans, then whatever all the rest of the apes in our clan are doing, that's fine. That's how we know where we fit. But when we have larger societies, you need some kind of formal structure. Say, rules that set down this is right, this is wrong. This is what people are supposed to do, not simply what you know, observe your neighbors doing. And that structure is called government. And so this idea here, the metaphor here about Nivla'im kish ol chayim, I'm going to join these chata'im, and they're telling me that we will swallow them whole. That is what the Mishnah uses as a model for what happens without government at all. The Pirkei Avot, Mitpalel, you should pray for the peace, security of the government. Even if it's evil, you still need it. Of course, if not the fear of the government, Ish et re'ehu chayima bala'av. The same idea of being swallowed alive. Archino talks about being swallowed alive. That's what happens in society without any kind of structure. And the Gemara compares this to the Pesukim Habakkuk, which says, "V'taseh adam k'dgei hayam." Man is like the fish. Just like with fish, the big ones swallow little ones. There's no control there. That if it wasn't for this structure we call government, anyone bigger, more powerful would swallow the other ones up. And the Maharal says it's not quite the same thing. It's not a matter of destroying the swallow, this bala'o, swallowed whole. It's that we really want to be the only human beings around, right? What I do is right. I am the only person here. Says, the Gemara says that you're supposed to say that you're supposed to think of yourself, that the whole world was created for my sake. That's important. We have to realize that it's not true just of me, but it's true of everyone, every other human being. And this is my famous Mishnah in Sanhedrin about creation. That's why human beings were created as one, as opposed to other animals that were created as the entire species all at once. Everyone came from one ancestor. And teach you that one who destroys one soul, some texts don't even have Israel in there. Destroying one person like destroying the entire universe. And supporting one person is like creating the whole world. And Lagidlacha Gidulatosha Kadosh Baruch Hu, and tell us a great Hashem is. That's why human beings were created just from one person. Shadem Tovea Kama Matbaot, Bechotam La'achad. And if like a human being stamps out coins with one stamp, everyone looks the same. Human beings, even though they came from the same origin, the same genetic background, no one's the same. No one's exactly the same. Everyone's unique. Everyone has their own significance. Therefore, everyone has to say, "Bishvili nivra ha'olam." So that's good, right? You're important. You're unique. But taken too far, we end up ignoring everyone else. So that's the Maharal talking about this. Right? Ish et re'ehu chayim b'la'o. And we would swallow up each other person. That's Maharal. Shrei kol adam
And I
omer
thought the whole idea of that being unique was that everybody has their own mission.
that
We have something that we're
becomes
bringing.
the important part that you're going to say Bishvilini Vraha'olam, that the world was created for me, but I still have to acknowledge that you have a part in it as well. It can't be all, I have to make sure that I think that the world was created for you also, right? So everyone's going to say, everyone's very into saying Bishvilini Vraha'olam. Everyone likes that, right? I'm important. But then you end up with the I'm well, therefore I'm the only person who matters here because the whole world exists for my sake. That's where literally in this where the metaphor is, I'm gonna swallow everyone else up. Everyone else is subservient to my purpose. I'm the only one who matters. I'm left alone. That's why you have to pray for the peace of the government, right? There has to be a sort of formal structure. Informal structures don't work with more than a couple dozen people. That's what joins people together in a common purpose. If one for that, not for that, everyone would try to swallow the other one up. Not in even the sense of destroying them, but just everyone became jockeying for status, one against the other, and I want to be the one who's on top. So your goal would be simply to have a point where I am the only one who exists. At least in terms of importance, right? Bishvili Nivra Olam, not anyone else. So we have this balance here, Bishvili Nivra Olam, but everyone else as well. And so the way out of the paradox is called anava, humility. And famously, the quote about humility is not thinking less of yourself, it's thinking of yourself less. Right? Talking about other places. So Rabbi Maris puts that together with this Pasuk in Mishlei about how we're trying to avoid this bad crowd here. And it says there's no getting away from our own vantage point. It's hardwired into the fabric of creation. It's saying the world exists for me. The Anav, humble, says the world was created for me because that's ingrained in all of us. His statement has a spin. He's actually saying the world was created for me to give. And that's the attitude you need. And so Mishlei goes on from there, says that now, B'ni, don't join with these people who are thinking only of themselves and trying to prey on the innocent. B'ni, al telech b'derech itam, don't go on the path with them. And hold yourself back from their ways. Nitiva, and a nitiv is a path as opposed to a derech, which is a bigger road. So nitiv is even the littlest things. I think that's what the Gra says. Lomar, lumivai sha'al tilech baderech. It's not enough that you're not going to go on their way with these rishayim chatayim. This is the main way. Shehem derechim v'olchim bo'itah. But that's where they want to do. They're robbing, they're stealing, they're killing. That's bad. Ela mina raglacha, min tivotam. Keep your legs away from even the littlest thing, b'fnei atzmacha, by yourself. Below him of tivotam, hakatanim. Don't go in those, even the littlest things with them. Shmehem b'anim la'derech hagol, because that leads you to the main path that's so bad. That's the tiva. The tiva is the path that lead to this, to the derech. Avoid them. Because you're going to be influenced by the people you're hanging out with. Because they're running to the bed. They're rushing to spill blood. And then he switches to a metaphor within the metaphor. Because they're wasting their time. They are casting the net in front of the birds. They're not going to catch anything because the birds immediately see that they're casting this net here. They're not going to help them. Yarovu, and they are in fact ambushing their own blood. It's after a time they're going to end up hunting, lying in wait for their own lives. They'll be the ones who will be hurt. Kain archot kol botzei betza. This is what happens to those who are simply interested in profit. At nefesh balav yikach, they take their own lives. As Rashi says, this is the way that everyone, at all who are only interested in gain, that if you steal something, even looks good, but it'll be for naught. You're not going to keep it. And so far, in the end, nefesh ba'alav yikach. He'll take his own soul. Nefesh atzmo, You're only stealing from yourself. The bottom line is you need to keep with the right crowd. And Rabbi Maris, I like the way he's looking at Sefer Mishlei, says, you know, when it talks about here, at Nefesh Ba'alav Yikach, and it takes away the life of its owner, this word Yikach you're taking has a history. It's used in the Torah for creating divisions, taking yourself out of society, tearing down society. And that comes from Korach. Yikach Korach. Right, the Korach took. Then Yitzhar by Kalaviv, the time by Ramani Elavon, Bepel, Bene Ruven, the Korach and Yitzhar, and the Tanav and Aviram, all by Yikach, they took. It doesn't say what they took, and Rashi points at that, because Korach, Lakach et atzmo, Yitzhar Echad. He took himself out of society, took himself to one side, Yot Nechalak mitoch Haida, separating himself from the rest of the community. And that, in the end of it, is what this Musar Avicha, Torah Mecha, is all about. It's not about this. Don't steal, don't murder. That's not what it's looking for. It's about the things that are a little more subtle, that the value of community, of having community standards that support everyone, and when you're watching and looking at everyone else's community, make sure it's this kind of community that you want to be belong to, that you want to belong to. That's something that tears everyone else down. And that becomes the essence of what Torah Dimecha is all about. I will stop here so I didn't prepare anything else. Now we will continue on next week.
You can even make it to Shul, Danny.